Welcome to episode number 36 of the Board Game OK podcast, recorded in windy and summery Helsinki, Finland. I'm your co-host Jonas, and with me is my co-host Luis.
Hello everyone.
Luis, I have a new project. Do you know what it is?
I do know what it is, but I think you want to say it to the public.
Yes, so in this situation you would say, no, I don't know.
No.
What are you up to these days, Jonas? Well, let me tell you, Luis, what I'm up to. So I am renovating an unused family house in the country and turning it into a second home for me and Chilla, which means a lot of new space for new games.
And that's a dream.
Yeah. And I am already thinking about, well, how am I going to divide my board game collection between our city apartment and a country place? Do I need to get new games for the country place? I think so. I think I need to get
100%,
new games.
100%, yes.
Yeah. And today, me and you, we will go through what would our kind of starter collections look like for cottages and second homes.
Mm-hmm.
For every game, we have kind of like a category or a bucket that game fits to. So if you're listening to this game, you could also, if you are listening to this episode, you can also think about, well, what would you put into those buckets if you would have to start a new second home or cottage collection?
Did you consider buying only new games, games that you currently don't have? Or are you considering like these are games that you would recommend anyone to put in their collection?
Yep. These are games that I don't own currently. There might be other games that might fit the category better, or I would recommend maybe more, but these are the ones I don't own at the moment, and I'm considering that this game could and should be in this collection.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting, because I started thinking about that, and then I was like, oh, well, many of the games that I now play, I think we approach this a bit different, because I already have a place that I go to, and you have a place that you are about to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So I consider also like games that I regularly take or that I would like to take. So this to me was also a bit of a mix, and it was harder for me to think about games that I don't own that I would like to take there.
Mm-hmm.
So I just took it in my mind. It's like, okay, these are games that I would recommend. So many of these games I do own or I have played already.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a little bit different for me and you, since you are already a cottage enjoyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never in my life had the privilege to have a second home. Family didn't have a second home. And before we get started with the list, maybe we could talk a little bit about cottages and Finland.
Mm-hmm.
Cottages in Finland usually referred to with the word mökki. Why did I say that in such a weird way? Mökki.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mökki. A lot of people in Finland, mökki.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it because I thought I was going to mess up. And I'm like, yeah, I want better Jonas to say it. And Jonas messed up worse than I could have.
Yep. And mökki is an easy word for Finnish speakers. I just, for some reason, it came out really weird. So there is a lot of mökkis in Finland, a lot of cottages in Finland. Okay, so I feel that cottages or mökkis and saunas are the two things that they don't translate into other countries. I remember years ago reading an interview of a person who translates Finnish literature to English, which means that, you know, it's books that's going to get sold in North America, in the UK. That person had to kind of translate saunas out of the books because almost everyone in Finland, if you own a house, you have a sauna in that house.
Mm-hmm.
If you are living in an apartment building, there's usually either a shared sauna in that the building complex, or you might have a sauna inside your apartment. I remember once going into a showing for an apartment I was planning to rent, and there was a sauna in the shower cabin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. You just like, inside the way you shower, you also had this bench that was mounted on the wall that you could put down, sit on it, and then there was a small, what is it called in English? A stove?
Stove. I think it's stone just stove. Sauna stove. Yeah.
Yeah, that you warm up, heat up, and then you throw water on it to create
in the shower.
In the shower room.
That's super interesting. I've never seen that.
Yeah, before. Well, that was the only place where that sauna could fit. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is, this might give you a very concrete idea of how obsessed Finnish people are with saunas.
Yeah, and this is something that you always tell people when they're visiting, like, yeah, we have more saunas than cars and whatnot. I think it's, to a certain extent, it's easy to translate that, but it's hard to translate the culture around it. To translate, like, the feeling of going to a mökki or the feeling of being in the sauna as maybe as you experience it as a Finnish person or while living in Finland, right?
The translation part, the difficulty with the translation is that if you describe a family that on a Saturday they enjoy the sauna, and if as an American you read that description, you imagine a very upper class family, probably. Or they have a sauna in their house.
Yeah.
A personal sauna. Well, that's pretty fancy.
Yeah.
Well, in Finland, just that if you just have like a sauna in your place, that doesn't make you fancy.
No.
At all. No. That is called bare essentials.
Yes.
Yep. And the reason why I'm talking about saunas and mökkis here is because, well, a cottage collection or a second home collection sounds a very snobbish or a very privileged, and yeah, I mean, it is a privileged thing to have in your life, but a very upper middle class kind of sounding collection. And I just want to also say that having a mökki or a cottage in Finland, that's a typical thing, right? Why do you think there are so many mökkis and cottages in Finland?
I just think people live in the city and they want to be able to enjoy the summer even more than just going outside in the city. So then you need to have a place where you can go and relax.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it's all about the culture that of like maybe not in the past, not traveling that much, but then having a place where you can still go and relax and having a place to enjoy the summer. I have no clue. I think there's probably a lot written about this that I'm ignorant about. But yeah, this is what I could think of.
Yeah, I don't know the full history of cottages and mökkis. My understanding is that in the 1960s, they got more popular. One thing that there is plenty of supply of in Finland is lakeside property. It's not necessarily close to the city, but there are a lot of lakes. This is a country of 1,000 lakes, and there's not a lot of people living around those lakes. There's a lot of property. And because of that, well, if you just have the money to build the thing, or like build a house that might not even have water, running water or electricity, the plot itself might be pretty cheap, you know, compared to many other places in Europe. And if you just can come up with money for the equipment, hey, you can build yourself a little cottage.
Yes. And enjoy it during the summer.
Yeah.
And maybe even the winter.
Yes. Ooh, winter. Yep. Many of those mökkis are not usually winter habitable.
No.
No. They're not enough insulation. Many of them don't have that electricity.
Yeah.
Many of them don't have running water.
Yeah.
In addition to a lot of land, one thing that there's a lot of in Finland is free time. At least, I guess, compared to USA.
Compared to many countries.
Yeah. Yeah. There's
even to compared to Europe, I think. Finland has one of the most high, like, well, maybe I'm not going to say that.
No, you can say that. But I don't know what the statistics are. I have a memory that at least Germany, an average German employee might have more vacation days than a Finnish employee. But for sure, Europeans and Finnish people and German people have more vacation days than Americans.
Yeah, well, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Not in Europe. We're not. Austria, Sweden, France, apparently, on average, has more than Finland. Finland has 38, according to a quick AI Google result, which might not be true at all. But Austria has 43, Monaco 42, France 41, Sweden 41, Finland 38.
Yes. So that many vacation days.
Yes. Okay.
Which means you have free time.
Yes.
And Louis, what do you do when you have free time?
You go to your mökki and build stuff.
Yes. You get rid of that free time.
Yeah.
To get new responsibilities.
Yeah.
You know, mökki. I wonder what is the ratio of like enjoying the mökki versus renovating the mökki, doing all kinds of yard work there, keeping everything operational.
Yeah, it's not even renovating. It's just like cutting the grass and cutting wood and making sure that the thing does not become a jungle. It's just a full-time job.
So there's a lot of things to do at the mökki, but every now and then you do get to have some free time. Mostly mökkis are used in the summer. But, you know, when the evening comes and you have spent plenty of time outside, maybe you have enjoyed the sauna, you might feel for a quick game.
Yeah, or if it's a rainy day,
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're there for the whole summer, for sure there's going to be some rainy days where you cannot go outside.
Yep, and you want to have some board games available for you.
100%.
Now, Louis, is gaming at the mökki same as gaming in the city?
I don't think so. I think there are some things that make gaming at the mökki feel a bit different. I think particularly for me, and this is one thing that I had trouble with creating this list, is that many times when we go to the mökki, if we go with more people, it's with people that maybe I'm not able to game with. So I normally think of gaming at the mökki as gaming with Mia only. Uh-huh. So in that sense, it can be similar to gaming at home. But I think the feeling of just being outside or just being in the nature, just being in a different place can change definitely the feeling of enjoyment of the game.
Yep. And what, for you, what is the vibe like at the mökki compared to the city? Are you the same Louis?
I think I'm very similar, Louis, but it's just more relaxed. You're like, you're in nature, as you said. Maybe you had just come back from being in the sauna and dipping in the lake or in the sea. And then you just feel so nice, relaxed. And then it's just, okay, let's play a game and let's enjoy the game with like maybe some candles or a bit more warmer light with the wooden cabin around you. Like it just feels like you are gaming on a holiday.
Mm-hmm. Now, what does that mean to you? Does it mean that then you rather go for a heavier game or you still want to keep it light? You want to keep that relaxed mood ongoing?
I think it really depends. Like just recently we played Brass Birmingham for the first time with Mia at the mökki.
Wow.
So it was like, yeah, I just taught her the game. She beat me because she almost always does. And yeah, it was a really nice experience. I thought it was amazing. Normally, I try to go for lighter games, easier to pack and take to the cottage. But every now and then, I think you can invest more time on a heavier game. And there is a special category that I have in my list about like games that maybe take a bit more time to play at the mökki.
Yep.
So I don't think you necessarily need to go for more relaxed, but it can feel easier to get into the mood of like, yeah, okay, let's play the game.
Yep. So do you currently have a mökki or a cottage collection? Do you have any games at the mökki?
I do have some games that I just left, but it's not a cottage that we can go during the winter. Mm-hmm. So I don't leave games during the winter there.
Yeah. Is it because otherwise they might look really bad? Does the cardboard get...
I think if it's very dry, I think it might not get bad, but still like, you know...
Yeah.
Dustiness and whatever. I don't know what could happen to my babies. So no, I will take them back to my place.
Yep. And our future mökki, well, it's not even that livable at the moment. It's a complete mess. A lot of wallpaper being removed, a lot of paneling being removed, a lot of all types of things not done yet that I need to do this summer. But hey, maybe I can think about the future when I will have that house for me and Chilla and all the games I get to put into the shelf.
Yes, I think that would be amazing. Is this place bigger than your current apartment?
It is. It is, which is very nice.
Do you have permission from Chilla to have a board game collection there at as big as the apartments?
Well, we have not discussed that. And I don't think it's going to get ever as big as the apartment's collection. Well, you know what? Who knows?
This is a place you can go in the winter as well.
Yes, this is a place I can go in the winter.
Yeah, so definitely, who knows? You might be like, yeah, let's just go there. And this is actually the place where you end up playing more games than in the city.
That can be. All right. Should we go to the list?
Let's go to the list.
Yeah. So we have those different categories for our games. We have both picked 5 games and 5 categories. Some of our categories, we overlap with the categories.
Mm-hmm.
You have some categories that are different from mine. Mm-hmm. I have some that are different from yours. And maybe we could start from the categories that are unique to us. Louis, do you want to go first? What's your first category?
All right. So my first category is story game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Story game is what I was saying, that's a particular feeling that you get or that I get when in the cottage. It's a place that sometimes you can go there and relax and it's different than home. So we have had in the past with Mia games that we kind of only played at the cottage. And one of those games is, for example, The Dark Quarter is a game that we took to the cottage last fall. We played it there, and then we didn't touch it until this spring where we like continued and started playing. Like, since then, we have played a couple of times at home, but I think it has happened that there are games that it feels like, okay, now this is our cottage game. And then that feeling, I think, is something that can become a category for also for listeners and for you, because I think it's very easy to have maybe one of these bigger games, maybe even a legacy game that you just play at the cottage, play in one specific game, live there, and then just revisit it when you are there, right? My game for that category, currently, it's kind of a cheat, but it's still like the game that I think I enjoy the most doing this with, and it's Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. It's not really a story game, but there is some story behind it, behind each one of the boxes. So it's nice to just pop open a case and then read it and then spend one night. And if it takes too long, then you just like leave it there on the table and then spend one other night trying to solve the case. And then when you're done, you can pack it away and then play next time you're at the cottage. So yeah, that is my game for this category.
Yeah, Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective is a game that I don't know whether it will stay in the city or whether it will go to the country, because I can totally see how it will be a nice experience to play in the country when you're a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah.
And I do think there's a story in the Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, because the sections where you read out text, there's a lot of text usually.
Yeah.
But it's usually very fun text.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. And it's just like, I think if you try to take this game too seriously where you're trying to beat Sherlock Holmes, you're never going to do it. And we have talked about this before.
Yeah.
But if you just try to figure out and play role play as an investigator, you're just, let's just ask this question to this person and go there without trying to defeat Sherlock Holmes, without trying to be perfect, is, I think, something that you can enjoy the story of it. And I think also each box expands into the story into like, hey, you are supposed to consult the previous day's newspapers to see if you can find clues. So always it starts building into that. I've only played the first box and I'm almost done with the first box, so I don't know the other boxes, but that's the beauty of choosing these games. Like, hey, when I finish the first box, the 10Ks in the first box, I have three more boxes to go.
Yeah, we have played one full box. We started from the sequels, not from the original box. Do not make that mistake. Do start from the first box, because the sequels, they contain certain scenarios or cases where you kind of need to know about the existence of certain characters. Mm. And I'm not just talking about, is it Moriarty?
Yeah, Moriarty.
It's not just Moriarty.
Yeah, okay.
But there are other characters where it would be really good that you played the first box to know that, this kind of character does exist.
Yeah.
But those are like very small things that happen. It's just, it will ruin one scenario maybe in a box. I don't know. Yeah. One sequel, we have played all of the 10 cases. From another sequel, we have played 5 cases. And from the first box, I think we have also played 5 cases.
Yeah.
And then there's the fourth box, the newest one, which we haven't touched yet. Yeah. So luckily, there's still Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective for us to solve.
Yeah. So that is my story game. First game that goes to the cottage.
My first game that goes to the cottage, or a category, is this chat and play games. Now, this is for a scenario where you're playing with family, or you're hanging around with family or guests. You're in that relaxed mood. You've been talking throughout the day and you still might want to continue conversations and just, you know, spending time together while also playing a game. You could pick an interactive game to have like a more social interaction in that gaming sense. But sometimes you just want to play, you know, cards or simple dice games that let you also talk a little bit, you know, and maybe throw in a couple jokes, without losing the focus or, you know, messing up your scoring objectives that you have in the end, those kind of stuff. And for this category of games, this chat and play game, I have picked myself Picomino. Have you heard about Picomino?
I have not heard about Picomino.
Picomino is a Rainer Knizia dice game. It is so simple. You have a handful of dice. You roll the dice, you pick one pip value, and you take all of those dice out of your pool. Then you roll again your other dice, so on and so on. And you try to get as high of a number as possible. When you hit a certain number, you get to take one of these domino-shaped tiles that have that number, and that's now in your score pile. I think it was so that if someone else gets that number as well, they might be able to steal it from you. There's like this stealing mechanic, but it's very simple, right? Everyone can play it. I haven't played it yet. I tried it on Board Game Arena. And when I tried it there, I was smitten. I just knew immediately, like, okay, this is a very fun, super simple dice game. You know, don't think too much. Just see how high can you roll.
Can you still get it?
Yeah, it is still available. Now, there are multiple different versions of Picomino. I think that, let's see which version particularly I'm most interested in. That would be Heckmeck am Bratwurmeck.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that the German version?
Yes, that is German version, but it's just dice, it's just numbers. You might be able to even remember the rules by head, so you might even throw out the rule book. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. See, this looks like a very interesting game. Definitely something that doesn't seem that you need to think about that much. I actually was thinking for this particular category when you share it with me, I was like, what? Maybe Liar's Dice? I was thinking that like that could be something that, but then that requires a bit more. Maybe concentration of what the other people are saying, so it might not be that easy to play as it seems this one. So sounds like a solid pick. Now I'm interested. Now I'm going to go try it in Board Game Arena.
Yeah. 6.6 rating on BGG, which is not great. Usually people stay away from games that are below 7.0. But I mean, I can see why it's 6.6 on BGG. There's a lot of BGG users who probably would never want to play Picomino. Picomino. I don't know how to pronounce it because it's too simple. You're just rolling dice. You try to get a high number with your dice.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. But that was my chat and play game. Picomino. Or Picomino.
Or Pick.
Or what was it? Kartenmeck am Bratwurmeck? Heckmeck am Bratwurmeck.
Yes. German version.
Yes.
All right. So one game that I thought about immediately when you selected this category and it's, or sorry, when you selected this topic for the episode, I was thinking like, oh, what game would be cool to play at the cottage? And the first game that came to my mind is this. And the category is RPG for the cottage.
RPG for the cottage.
RPG, role-playing game for the cottage, TTRPG.
How does this change from, oh, we're talking about like TTRPG.
TTRPG.
So not a board game, technically.
Not a board game, okay. Technically. So it's maybe breaking the rules, but this is a game that I'm like, hey, that would be cool to play there.
Yeah.
I own it, but I have never played it. I haven't even read the rules, but the idea of it excites me, and this is why I want to play it. And this is A Thousand-Year-Old Vampire. Technically, this is a game for one person. So it's a solo RPG.
Yeah.
Which, cool. If you don't have anybody else to play with, then you can play it by yourself. If Chila doesn't want to come to the cottage with you, then why not? Great option.
Yes.
But this is a game that I bought and we bought with Mia thinking about playing it together. Like just imagining what's the story of the vampire and creating the story together.
Yeah.
And I can imagine, again, with some rainy day, you don't have anything to do. You cannot go outside, or even if you're outside in the sun, why not? But then it would be maybe defeat the theme and the mood. But in a rainy day, in the middle of the dark days in Finland, then you can just play imagining that you are a vampire. And apparently, the RPG doesn't last that long, so you don't have to have multiple sessions.
Yeah,
I think it goes on in like one or two or maybe three sessions.
Okay.
So then it's just like, it seems like a great thing to have at the cottage and then try to play there. So I have been thinking about like taking the game and just leave it there and maybe try to play it there.
Was it so that this is kind of like a journal that you browse through and you do different things or prompts that is in the journal.
This is a book that you browse through and there are different prompts.
Uh-huh.
And then with those prompts, you have to kind of say what happened to the vampire.
Yeah.
And that, depending on what you roll, then it will be a different prompt that you read and then you'll be just creating the story. And it's just, apparently you're just forgetting people and meeting new people and then killing people. And it's like, hey, living 1,000 years is a long life. Mm-hmm. So it's just how you create the story. And it sounds interesting to me and I would really like to try it. And why I decided that this was a valid category, it's not board games, but I'm like, hey, RPGs you can play with your significant other, just with one person. So you're the game master and there's one people. But also if you have more people visiting, like why not have it be the game of the cottage? Oh, and
yeah,
again, if you don't if you don't want to play, you can just browse through the book yourself and just enjoy reading an RPG book.
Yeah, I do not mind at all this RPG wild card in these categories. So I'm still curious about Thousand Year Old Vampire. I knew that it existed. I at some point thought about trying it out, getting it. The reason I think I got less enthusiastic about Thousand Year Vampire is because I got like a PDF version of The Quiet Year. Mm-hmm. Have you heard about that?
No.
So The Quiet Year, it's also an RPG that you can play with just two player. You can also just solo it. The idea is, I think you have a deck of cards. You pick a card and then there's a printout that gives you the prompt. Mm-hmm. And in that map, you kind of like add the thing, you add the event that is happening, or you might add a section to the map. To me, it seemed like a pretty fun system. Mm-hmm. A lot of creative drawing, a lot of fun world building that you can do with The Quiet Year. I was able to convince Chilla to give it a go, and Chilla said, never again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So after that, I thought that, well, maybe we don't try The Thousand-Year-Old Vampire either.
What was it about it that she didn't like?
Well, why don't people like RPGs in general? I think there's just, there is this demand for creative storytelling,
mm-hmm.
right? Sheila is a creative storyteller. She loves writing, you know, she loves writing fiction, writing her own stories. But I think it just wasn't the right format for her.
Mm.
She's not that into world building. I'm not that into world building necessarily either. And I guess it was just the wrong engine to get those stories out.
Okay.
Just not really tickling her fancy at all.
Yeah. Well, I will have it in my cottage collection. And whenever I played it, I'll let you know how it went.
Yes. My second category for cottage games is non-math games.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit similar to chat and play, but this time you won't be able to do so much chatting. But these are games where you don't need to count how many wheat do you actually need to acquire this turn so that you can get the sheep on turn three so that you can fulfill this victory point objective that will give you two more points than that other victory point objective. You know, non-math games, you can just keep your math brain turned off if you had it turned off for the whole time you were at the cottage. In the city, you always have your math brain on. You're counting deals that you're encountering on the streets.
Yes.
Is that a good deal for me or is it not? I don't have time for you. Your deal is bad. That's the kind of math. You just
keep you're always doing math. Hey, is the boss already here? The boss is 30 seconds late. What's happening? How am I going to make it? Should I start walking? It will take me 15 minutes to get to the office. No, I'm going to be late for that meeting. Oh, I'm going to be on time. Maybe I can just stop for an ice cream or I can stop for an espresso. Oh, but that will take maybe 5 minutes to make. Uh-huh. And if there's a line, it's going to take 10 more minutes to make. Yeah, all the time math.
Yes. But at the Mökki, well, time is but a concept.
Yes.
There's, what is even time? Do you need to even count anything? I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe you need to count how many potatoes you want to boil.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think
that's about it.
Yeah. I guess that's also like a cultural thing, eating potatoes at the Mökki.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. In Finland, eating potatoes.
Yeah.
Just people would not. Well, why do you eat so many potatoes?
Especially this summer.
Yeah.
That's like classic Mökki food. Boil some potatoes.
Yes. New potatoes.
New potatoes. Yeah. Okay. Non-math game. The one I picked here is Mennara. I have briefly mentioned it when I talked about my top 10 family games. Mennara is a cooperative dexterity game. You're trying to build this big structure together, try to beat the game together. This is a game that is just constantly on people's lists as the best dexterity game, as their favorite dexterity game. I am sold, but I haven't bought it because I don't know where can I put it on my shelf. I'm running out of room. But hey, now I have a new shelf where I can put Mennara, and I'm looking forward to playing it at the cottage.
Yeah, it sounds like a super interesting game. Super switch your math brain off. Well, maybe you could do some math. If I put it here, it has two more than one. Two is more than one, so this is going to be heavier, this side. So maybe there's some math.
Yeah, but that's this kind of, that's good math.
Okay.
That's the kind of math that's good for your brain. the type of math that's not good for your brain always is counting those
deals.
Yeah, and those marginal victory points.
Yes.
And those conversions.
See, the game that I had for this category, if I had chosen this category mm-hmm. to be one, was Codenames. I thought it was like, yeah, well, maybe you do have to give the number of clues that you're trying to make, which is mathy. So that's why I also was like, yeah, maybe I will not choose that category. But I'm like, yeah, doesn't sound like math that much, yeah. Math, and it's always fun. And if you're only two people, you can get Codenames to it. And yeah. That will probably be a lot of fun.
Have you played Codenames Do It?
I have now. Yes, I have played mm-hmm. Codenames Do It, and it was surprisingly funny. Mostly same as Codenames. The fun comes after the game, whether you, especially I think in Do It, it's easier to fail because you're playing against the game. Uh-huh. And when you choose the assassin, and there's multiple assassins per side, unlike Codenames where you only have one. It's just like, ah, why did you choose that clue? That was so having those conversations and those little rants and rambles after the game is what makes it fun and enjoyable, I think.
Yep.
Plus the game is it's still nice to play.
Yeah, Codenames Duet was another big miss for me and Chilla. I thought it was like okay. Mm-hmm. Chilla again said that, yeah, let's not do that again. Mm. To me, that was the thing that was missing in Codenames Duet compared to Codenames was that team vibe, which I, when playing Codenames Do It, I realized how much the team mentality matters to me, that I feel that, oh, we are in a team against that team. And in Do It, it's more cooperative, just me and you.
In a team against a game.
Trying to solve these words. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. That was my non-math game, Menara. Now, the rest of the categories are something where we both have picked a game for and we have shared.
Yes.
First category is the two-player game. So I don't know how this is for you, but the kind of prompt I gave for you when I described this category was that, hey, there's a lot of renovating and fixing happening at the Mökki. So for me and Chilla, I was thinking, well, what's a game that after a day of renovation, we can sit down and still enjoy even when we are physically tired?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I want to hear first, what is your pick for this category?
Well, in this category, I had picked originally something that I own. So I tried to consider, okay, maybe this is an easy category that I can get something that I don't currently own. And I chose, because it won so many Golden Geek Awards, I chose Toy Battle.
Oh, why Toy Battle?
I don't know. It was just a nice two-player game. I have played it now with Mia. Mia enjoyed it. I think there's a lot of juiciness into it. It's a good game and I don't own it. So I'm like, hey, this could go to the cottage either by leaving it there, which I probably won't do, but it's also pretty small box, so easy to carry.
Yeah.
So that was my thinking behind it. And you can play a game in 10, 15 minutes and then you lose, you play again and mm-hmm. it's not, doesn't require any particular heavy thinking. Well, the game is quite strategic, so it requires heavy thinking there. But if you lose, it's not like a two-hour game. It's just like, oh, I'll try again. I'll try a different strategy. And there's a bit of luck there, so you can always blame that to the luck.
Yeah. How many consecutive games of Toy Battle can you see playing with Mia, after which you personally will be, okay, that's enough Toy Battle for today. Let's put this game away. And you can just say...
I think five. Or like, it really depends. Like,
yeah.
I've only played this one time with Mia, but multiple games in a row. And I think what kept motivating Mia is that I kept winning. Mm-hmm. So I think we played four or five games until she finally beat me and she was like, yeah. So I think if it happened again, where like I'm losing 2-3 battles, then I could be like, oh, let's play one more until I win. And then eventually you're going to win, right? Eventually you're going to change the strategy. You're going to get a little bit better luck. Then you're like, okay, now it's my turn to win. So I think if that's happening, it can become really competitive either because you just want to get that one win or because you get 1-1. Okay, let's play another one for the tiebreaker. And then tiebreaker, no, two more, 3 out of 5 instead of. So I think 5, maybe even 7.
Yeah, all right. My pick for this two-player game category is Cottage Garden. Cottage Garden for my cottage collection. Cottage Garden is by the Polyomino maestro Uwe Rosenberg himself. It's from this series of Polyomino games he did for Spielwiese, or is it Edition Spielwiese? There was Cottage Garden, Indian Summer, and something, something, something. Indian Summer, we had to try it with Chilla. Oh yeah, hey, let's go back a little bit. Patchwork. So that's the legendary polyomino game by Uwe Rosenberg. Yes, some people say A Feast for Odin, that's even more legendary. But hey, let's not kid ourselves. There are polyominoes in Feast for Odin, but yeah, it's a different kind of game. So the polyomino game Uwe Rosenberg is probably most known for is Patchwork. Mm-hmm. Two-player polyomino game. Super, super solid. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the game. It is so great. Well, me and Chilla, we have played probably over 100 times Patchwork. So, hey, every now and then it would be nice to play in some other polyomino game. We have tried these other Uwe Rosenberg polyomino games. Indian Summer that I mentioned earlier, that was a complete miss. It's way too short, which is a weird complaint. It's too short. There is this one cool mechanic that you get to do, but you get to do it kind of like only one time in the game, and then the game is over, you know? Cottage Garden, it's 6.8 on BGG. Again, really bad rating. Mm-hmm. The first time I played it, I thought that, well, yeah, it's kind of nice and feels a little bit, maybe too forgiving. It's maybe a little bit too easy to put the tiles on. Basically, you have two grids where you're putting tiles on, and whenever you complete one of those grids, you get a new grid in, meaning that you probably always have some place where you can put a tile in. But we ended up playing it quite many times, like way over 10 times. We had a library copy that we were playing. And I kind of like got over this initial frustration, or not even a frustration. Well, this initial feeling of this game is not hard enough, because I got into the mood of trying to get a really, really, really amazing score. And that keeps me coming back to the game. Chilla loves it as well. Yeah, Cottage Garden. The illustrations, the theme, it's a perfect mökkipeli. It's a perfect cottage peli. Mökkipeli, cottage peli. It's a perfect mökki game. It's a perfect cottage game. Are these like watercolor illustrations that are in this game? They are just so nostalgic. They make me really think these kind of countryside homes. Really make me think about my childhood. Just feels so wholesome. And it's a pretty good game as well. Yeah. Hmm.
Spring Meadow, was it?
Spring Meadow, yes. That was the third game. So the trilogy was Cottage Garden, Indian Summer, and Spring Meadow.
Yes.
Spring Meadow we haven't tried. Indian Summer cannot recommend for anyone. Cottage Garden, hey, this is good. But why is it 6.8 on PGG? I have no idea.
Spring Meadow has 7.0, so it might be the better version.
Yeah, Indian. Oh, wait, did you say what?
Spring Meadow.
Is
7.0.
Well, how much is Indian Summer?
Indian Summer, I don't know.
Oh, Indian Summer is 6.8 as well. Spring Meadow might be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to try that as well. But yeah, it's really the illustrations that make this a great mökkipeli. The game itself is also very solid. We really enjoy playing it. It's not a two-player only game. Goes on also to four players, but I don't like playing these types of games with more than two players.
Okay.
You know, you're just doing your own special puzzle.
Yeah.
I don't want to wait for other people's turns. Yeah.
All right. So that was your two-player game.
Yes. Cottage Garden.
And you keep saying mökkipeli.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have explained why the peli.
Yeah. Have I said it like more times than previously?
I think only with this game.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah. Because peli is game in Finnish.
Yeah.
And whenever you say one Finnish word, then it's easy to continue with another Finnish word.
Yeah. So mökkipeli is game for the cottage.
Yes. Mökkipeli. My mökkipeli for two players is Cottage Garden.
All right. So what is the next category that you want to go to?
Yeah. This one is the flexible player count game. Mm-hmm. The scenario is that you invited maybe two other couples or three or four friends to join you at the cottage, and you want to do some gaming, but then, you know, someone cancels.
Yeah.
Two people cancel, or two people are coming, but now it's six people, and, you know, you have to kind of adapt to the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And with a small collection, you might need those games that can adapt to the moment. I think the really challenging player count is six players.
Yeah.
So I have, for example, picked a game that might not be so great at three or four players, but it's supposed to be really great at five or six players, which to me are like those really, really challenging player counts.
Okay.
But before I get to my game, let me hear your pick and how did you think about this flexible player count game?
Yeah, for flexible player count game, I wanted to play a game that I think can play well with any number of players. So 2 to 6, that plays well. And I was also thinking, okay, this is a game that goes also into a bit of the chat and play, the turn your brain off. So I think like, hey, it covers everything. When I was deciding, I'm like, I don't want to pick a game for those categories in particular. I would rather have the other two categories instead. I'm like, yeah, that this game kind of fits all of those categories. And I decided that my game was going to be Llama.
Llama.
Llama, a nice, easygoing card game that has a bit more depth that people give it credit for. And that every time I played it, anybody that I have played it with has enjoyed it. Uh-huh. It goes up to 6 people. You can play it with 2 people. I think it plays well at any player count.
Yeah, 2-player game, I'm feeling that, okay, that one might be a bit lacking. But yes. Yeah, but the fun starts from 3.
Yes.
Goes so all the way up to 6.
Yeah, definitely goes all the way to 6. I think with 2, that's the first time I've ever played Llama. I played with 2 people 10 times, and I was like still super enjoyable. But
okay,
I agree.
Great.
After you have played with more people, then it's like, yeah, with 2, it's you can choose a different game then maybe. Uh-huh. But anyway, so that was Llama. It's easy to carry. You can have it there. You can have no Llama dice. You can have many different versions of these and then just have a selection of Llamas to give your visitors. But Llama is the one that I'm choosing officially.
Yep. And Llama is the game that will be available our cottage or our mökki as well, because our mökki is going to be in the same yard as my mom's house.
Yeah.
And Llama I have left at her house.
Yeah.
Because that's the only place where I play it. You know, she plays it with my sister's kids. So
yeah.
An amazing game. Yeah.
It is.
Yep.
6.5 in BGG.
Whew, yeah.
This is not deserved.
No, but I think maybe that's kind of the... When you're looking for a mökki peli or a cottage game, mm-hmm. you really want to look at that below 7
yeah.
range. Yeah. Okay, so my flexible player count game, I have something a bit heavier. So first I was thinking about Power Grid. Have you ever played Power Grid?
I've never, and I would love to play it. Yeah,
me neither. And that's the thing that's one of those games where I'm thinking to myself that I need to someday play Power Grid. I probably will enjoy it a lot. It's just maybe it's a game that everyone else has already played, and that's why it doesn't get suggested that much, because everyone else knows it except me and you, Louis. But I thought that, okay, Power Grid might be a bit too heavy, you know, might be a bit too economic for some. Lords of Vegas would be the game that I would love to pick for this category, but I didn't want to pick a game that is impossible for me to get. I went again today to check, like, okay, Lords of Vegas, is there any news about the availability in Europe? Mm-hmm. No, it has not been invented in Europe yet. We do not have Lords of Vegas in Europe. You can get it in the US. The publisher sells it from their web store. They do not ship to Europe. I would have to do one of those things where you get it shipped somewhere in the US and then that company sends it to you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So what am I left with? Medici. Another Rainer Knizia game. This is our third Rainer Knizia game.
Yeah.
Have you heard about Medici?
I heard about Medici, but I've never played it.
Yeah, one of Rainer Knizia's classic auction games often gets compared to Ra and modern art, but maybe gets often overshadowed by those games. So
yeah.
Ra and modern art are much more known. Few people pick Medici as their favorite of the bunch, but in higher player counts, there are plenty of people who say that, wow, when you have 6 players, hey, Medici, that's the game you want to play. I checked out the rules for Medici today. Mm-hmm. And I'm loving it. This feels like a game that I can, you know, play with like a wide variety of people. People who are really into games, people who are not that into games. It still probably will work. What happens in Medici, there's this fun mechanic. You get to draw up to 3 cards from the deck to put up for auction. But you get to choose when to stop. And you might want to, because there's this thing that, well, you don't want to give too many good cards for others, but they will give you money if they buy it from you. So there's this balance, maybe thinking mm-hmm. of, okay, well, is this the thing I'm going to auction? Is this going to be too good?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, Medici. And that one is in stock.
And that one you can buy.
That one you can buy.
And that one you will buy.
Yes, most likely. The one sad thing about the new print of Medici is that there's like production issues. Apparently, Medici is cursed in terms of productions. Every production has been bad in some sense. The current bad things in Medici's new print is that, well, you have 5 different suits or resources that you try to collect. And of course, you have nice colors that give you kind of indication of what is what. There's 2 colors that are extremely similar to each other. There are cards that match those colors and that are on the board. If you look at the cards, you really feel that, okay, the other card that matches for this based on color should be the other one. So there's this color thing going on. The victory point markers that you use to move on the track, they are these ships that you cannot stack. Meaning that, hey, Luis, if you have 20 points and I have 20 points, my victory point marker has to be outside of the board because it doesn't fit on the same space. The player token marker colors are a little bit off compared to the player board markers. So, yeah. These are kind of like small issues, but I feel that I might be able to overlook those issues because the gameplay itself seems super solid.
All right. Yeah, I'm now super interested in playing Medici after this glowing recommendation.
Yeah. Although with Medici, it might be that it does not end up in the cottage collection. It might be then that it comes back to the city and turns into a meetup game because it also feels really great for meetups. Okay. We have arrived to our last category,
mm-hmm.
which I feel this is the crown jewel of a cottage collection. So this is the classic game. This is the game that will make you feel nostalgic about games of your childhood. I was about to say that I don't know what it is, but you know, being in the countryside really makes me kind of think about my childhood. You know why that might be? It might be because that's where I spent my freaking childhood.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I played Monopoly, those kind of games. And every now and then it's just, there's a game that makes you feel that, oh, this is like a better game of what I played as a kid. But I feel that, hey, now we're kids again as adults.
Yeah. So this is where I get so jealous of people that were raised in Europe in general or in Germany in particular, because I think the gaming culture is bigger here. At least I have a lot of Finnish friends, and I know a lot of Finnish German people that are like, they played good games with their family when they were growing up. And I only played Monopoly and other Milton Bradley stuff, like stuff that really is the epitome of what people call Ameritrash, right? Which is just not all based on rolling, and then there's no luck. This game called Sorry, which was a version of what you call Kimball here.
Yeah.
But with cards, which was just like a super, super luck-based, no strategy almost at all. Not good games, but then this is the games that my family used to play, and that was the games that made it to the table. So I decided not to choose any of these games. I think the only games that I used to play that still I like playing and that I would enjoy and bring me nostalgia in a good way are some sort of trivia games. Like, you know, we used to play Trivial Pursuit, but I used to like the Mexican version. The Mexican version is not produced anymore. And the good thing about Trivial Pursuit is that they are very localized. So that was great for Mexico, but that's really bad for playing a Trivial Pursuit here or in English here, because it's like history from the UK that is really ambiguous, or history from the US, which is like, okay, this is not the time. We have a version of that, which I like playing. However, this is not the games that I'm choosing. I went a bit with all of your prompts for this. First, I used to play with my grandma and my family. We used to play a lot of cards, right? Card games. The most famous one is we used to call Continental, which is continental.
And we're talking about classic card games. Classic French deck.
Yeah. Yes, with a classic French deck. And we used to play another one that they used to call Rumi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I think has some of the rules of Rumi Q, like which has the tiles instead of the cards. But we used to play those two mostly when we were kids. However, I went with your other prompt of like, hey, this has had to be a new game that you have never played. So I chose Cribbage. Cribbage is a game that I would really like to try. I've heard a lot about it.
Yeah.
I think the Brothers Murph have put it in like their number one list or number or top 10 list for a while. And people recommend it a lot with two. You can play it with more people, with three or with four, with alternate rules or two by two. But this is a game for two people. And it's in alt. It's a classic. I have never played, so it will not give me nostalgia. But with those card plays, just a classic French deck or a couple of French decks that you can play with these. And hey, you then have a French deck to play many other different games. Uh-huh. So this is my choice for the cottage. And you only need the cribbage board. You don't even need it. I guess you can have an app online, but it would be nice to have for the toy factor there to moving like the little pigs.
Yeah. So when was this released and who was the designer?
So supposedly it was a 1630. So it's a 17th century game. And it says that the designer actually is a name designer, Sir John Suckling. Uh-huh. So I'm pretty surprised about that information being there in BGG.
Yeah.
But yeah, a 1630 game that still stands today, still recognized. It's a great game. I have never played it. I've read the rules a long time ago. I don't remember. But it's more about playing cards and trying to make a certain amount of points.
Yeah.
It still seems like super strategic and good enough to make it to a classic collection. And that is my nostalgia classic game.
Yeah, there is a lot of cribbage love in the board game community. You know, a lot of people have fondness towards the game. I have never played it myself either. That's on my bucket list, definitely, to play cribbage one day.
Yeah, and I would love that this game would be the game that, for example, with my kids later on, I will play cribbage, and then they would have the instilled sense of nostalgia with card games like I have in the with the Continental and the Rummy. Yeah. Which, to be honest, I would have loved that my family like more games. Like, hey, if you have so many games that play with cards, why didn't we play like, oh, today Continental, but tomorrow not Continental anymore. Let's play a different one. I never understood that. But it was always Continental, and that at some point you like burn out of those games, especially when you're a kid. You're like, yeah, I don't want to play anymore.
Yeah, this is a little bit related, a tangent to classic card games. So me and Chilla, we were in Hungary not so long time ago, and I thought to myself that, hey, let me bring my Hungarian cards, the Major Karta, which is, I think it's like a Wilhelm Tell card deck. It's also like a German card deck. It's in Hungary. They call it the Hungarian card deck. 32 cards. And I Googled like, okay, what would be cool games, like specifically Hungarian games that I could play there, because I had also Finnish friends traveling with me. And I thought that, hey, it would be fun if the occasion arises to play a Hungarian traditional Hungarian card game somewhere in Hungary. Well, the occasion never rose, but, you know, I was looking at the different rules. Ulti is, was it like the national card game of Hungary? And I thought that, wow, that sounds really cool. And it was best at 3, which made me think like, hey, nice, I can play this with Chilla and Chilla's mom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I looked at the rules and I thought to myself, wow, these are the most complex trick-taking game rules that I have ever seen.
Okay.
Yeah. It seemed really cool, but I think you need a A4 printout of a player reference of like what do different
if
sets
this mean. Happens in that. Okay. Yeah. I can imagine that not being the most fun.
So that's when you said like, oh, why didn't we try a different card games? And I thought to myself, wow, there's like so many cool card games, but that are insanely complex. Even in modern board gaming standards.
But there's so many cool card games that are not insane.
That is true. That is true.
You know, Hearts.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, that's a great question. Why? And in Finland, people don't play Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I played it for the first time in my life last year or 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing game.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it just didn't catch fire here.
Or Regicide nowadays. You can play Regicide with a normal deck of cards.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah. So that is my selection for this classic nostalgia.
Cribbage. Yep. So you said that you are envious of these European families playing their Catans and whatnots in their childhood. You know what, Louis? My childhood games were exactly the same as yours. Monopoly, and that's it.
Yeah.
Pretty much just this. Oh, well, we did have one a very Finnish game called Afrikan Tähti, the Star of Africa, that probably every Finnish family has had a copy in the 90s at some point. So when I thought about the game or that game for this category, I was particularly thinking that, okay, what would give me and other people the Monopoly vibe or that, like, you know, a Game of Life vibe or something that, oh, this is like that game from the childhood, but good.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. And the game that I ended up picking here is Luxor. So Luxor from 2018 by Rüdiger Dorn. So I played Las Vegas recently, which is a Rüdiger Dorn dice game, which, wow, just from one play, it's just kind of seemed really amazing. And I thought that, hey, I should check what there are other things Rüdiger Dorn has made. I saw Luxor on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Online, I have kind of seen a couple Luxor fans. And when I look at those people's top games lists, I see a lot of similar tastes, especially in this like family weight category, which got me interested about Luxor. Now, what does Luxor have to do with my childhood? Well, that's how it links to the Star of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
In Star of Africa, you go to Africa to get some diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is a bit of a problematic theme in many ways, also with the illustrations on the board. But I think that game has left this hunger for treasure hunt in many Finns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they want to play a board game, hey, are we looking for treasure?
Yeah.
Because that's good. You know, and in Luxor, well, you are raiding pyramids or tombs of the old pharaohs.
Yeah.
So you are looking for treasure.
Yeah.
And that's why I picked Luxor.
And is it like, from what you said, you haven't played it, right?
I have not played it.
But you played his other game and it's kind of a roll and move type of?
No. So the game I played was Las Vegas. It was super, super, super simple. Might be even simpler than Picomino or at least in the same category. You mentioned Llama. Think Llama level of complexity. Okay. That's Las Vegas. Luxor, that's a step up in terms of weight, but it's still considered to be in this family weight.
Okay.
So if as a family you want to play kind of like a proper board game, a board game that really feels like a board game, Luxor could fit there. It's not a roll and move. It's you have cards in your hand that you play, and then that's how many spaces you move. It has this bonanza thing where cards come in. You have to play only the rightmost card or the leftmost card. So you're locked in with your decisions, which is great in family setting. It means people are more confident with making decisions because they are limited with their decisions. Yeah. Hey, not available at the moment, but there is a Luxor big box coming out, should be coming out by the end of the year.
Okay.
And I'm curious about that Luxor big box.
Interesting. I now also color me intrigued.
Yeah. Might be a bit too simple for our gaming group.
Yeah.
Maybe even for the meetup. Or not necessarily for the meetup. With the right people, it might be like the right level of weight. This is a game I feel that, hey, you know what? I can play this with people who are not necessarily that into board games or are board game curious, but get a bit confused when I start teaching Wingspan.
Yeah.
Saying like, oh, then now you're going to tuck your cards here and you move this cube here. You can play cards in these different areas. No. Now it's just about like, okay, hey, you want treasure? Well, now you're going to go out and find treasure.
Yeah, definitely. One game that now that you were talking about classic games and you mentioned Afrikan Tähti that came to my mind, that is also a game that I first saw here, but I don't think it's particularly Finnish. It's called Labyrinth or Mutabaa Labyrinthi.
Yeah, Labyrinth. Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Awakened Realms just came out with a deluxe version, Chronicles. I don't know if it's a legacy game. I have not read. I was just really surprised when I saw that like last year, I think in Essen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, this maybe fits also the bill there where like it's a very easy game. I don't know how the Chronicles would be, but I think surprisingly enjoyable also that I would be able to play with anybody and super simple. And maybe the Chronicles make it a bit more heavier gamer friendly. So
yeah, I have no idea what this new Labyrinth is going to be like, but yeah, I'm well aware that this exists. The original Labyrinth, even as a kid, I think as a kid it was one of those games that I never really got to play.
Yeah,
other families had it, then I saw it, I said like, oh, can we play Labyrinth? And people were like, oh, I played it 100 times, I don't want to play it anymore. I'm like, oh, but
it.
I never got to play Labyrinth. I played Labyrinth a couple of years ago with my sister's kids, with my nephews. And I thought to myself that I don't actually like this game.
Mm.
what you're doing is like you're just thinking like, okay, how do I move this thing here to put these things connected correctly? To me, that's not as fun as finding the treasure.
Yeah, I can see that. But it just made me think about that when you were saying that. So worth mentioning.
Another game that could fit the treasure hunting is Tobago that I mentioned briefly mentioned in the family game top 10, Jonas's family games. I own Tobago now. Still haven't tried it yet, but would for sure also probably fit this category quite nicely.
Bruce Allen. It looks so much like a...
Bruce Allen?
Yeah.
Who is Bruce Allen?
Or, no, never mind. Yeah, Bruce Allen is the designer.
Of who?
Of Tobago.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that I didn't know.
I was going to say that it looks so much like a Reiner Knizia game, but it is Bruce Allen.
Yeah.
Anyway, doesn't matter, but I was just like, oh, another game like Reiner Knizia, and then suddenly like, oh, wait, no, that's not...
Yeah,
that game.
But this is a little bit of a Reiner Knizia game because there's a joke that Rüdiger Dorn is actually an alias for Reiner Knizia.
Oh, really?
There are similarities between the two designers, which of course also, you know, got me interested, more interested about Rüdiger Dorn.
But yeah, that's sad if Rüdiger Dorn exists because then like nobody's recognizing his games. They're like, oh, this is just another Reiner Knizia game. This guy doesn't exist. He's not a designer.
Hey, I've also heard, since we talked about Reiner Knizia, Looking for Treasure, Quest for El Dorado, could also go here. To me, I have to say no. I have to say no to Quest for El Dorado. Deck building game, you just end up getting too good at it.
Yeah, you.
Yeah. When you play it too many times and then you can't really play it with other people because you just end up beating them. Or you have to, you know, hold back and then the game is not that enjoyable for you. With Luxor, I'm hoping to have a little bit of that luck involved to keep things more balanced, even though the game experience might be wildly different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a super interesting game. I'm looking forward to playing it as well.
All right. Hey, that was it. Thank you, Louis, for sharing your Möcki collection. And hey, yeah, if I would be listening to this podcast, I would be kind of now thinking that, oh, which games would I pick for a second collection somewhere in a more relaxed setting, maybe a little bit more family oriented, maybe more situations where you never know who you're going to end up playing games with, who is going to stay over. Hey, you could even put those games in the Spotify comments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, put them there. But other than that, we want to thank you for your time. Our next episode airs in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Bye-bye, okay.